Welcome to Nobody Told Me. I'm Laura Owens.
And I'm Jan Black.
On this episode, we're focusing on forgiveness. Do you find it difficult to forgive? Do you wish others would find it easier to forgive you? Joining us is Dr. Fred Luskin, who's the director of the Stanford Forgiveness Projects, an ongoing series of workshops and research projects that investigate the effectiveness of his forgiveness methods on a variety of populations.
Dr. Luskin is one of the world's leading researchers on forgiveness. He's the author of the best-selling books, Forgive for Good, A Proven Prescription for Health and Happiness, and Forgive for Love, The Missing Ingredient for a Healthy and Lasting Relationship. Doctor, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, you're welcome.
How do you define forgiveness?
Wow. You know, unfortunately, there's many definitions. What we do is try to make it as practical as possible. So basically, it's stop throwing a hissy fit when life didn't go the way you want. It's not about the past at all, that it's about the current, like arguing with your own life.
What is Stanford's Forgiveness Project? It's such an amazing idea for something. And we were also wondering how you became interested in the topic yourself.
Yeah. Well, the Forgiveness Project was or is a an attempt to like figure out how to help people forgive. I mean, just a simple practical desire to teach this stuff, to understand what works and what doesn't. And at its core, a desire to help people suffer less. I got into the Forgiveness Project because I had been very badly hurt, betrayed many years ago. And had no skills and no clue how to handle it and went flailing around for a number of years with anger and disappointment and bitterness and mistrust. And my wife came to me one day and said, Fred, I still love you, but I don't like you as much. That you've let this festering wound occupy you way too much. And that's not what I signed up for when I got married to you. And that was such a slap and such a shock that it forced me to investigate what else can I do about this besides being angry or feeling sorry for myself or just arguing. And so that was the precipitating event for my own forgiveness. And then the Stanford Forgiveness Project was a very small research project that was catalyzed by Bill Clinton's affair with Monica Lewinsky into, we became internationally known because when Monica Lewinsky's dress, which had Bill Clinton's semen on it, was DNA identified as his, we got all these calls from media outlets because they didn't know who else to ask, should Hillary forgive Bill? And that media interest took what had been an unknown and tiny project into like me and my other, you know, my other member into like experts in forgiveness. It was because of Bill and Monica.
How did you then decide that this was something that we could look at or that you could look at with regard to other grievances around the world, like the violence in Northern Ireland and 9/11?
We got a grant that allowed us to really study forgiveness. And the strongest understanding we came from working with so many people was that it didn't really matter what the offense was, that it could be anything. What mattered was how people reacted. And we saw that was 180 degrees different than most psychotherapeutic approaches, which were, tell me again, like how bad it was with your mother or your lover or anything. And we came to understand that the content varied a lot, but how you process the grudge and how you resolve the grudge were very similar. And so we started, because of that, to reach out to much more difficult and much more challenging areas to investigate if forgiveness works.
And so what did you find, and why is it that some people aren't willing to forgive somebody for a very minor grievance, but then you hear stories about how families of a murder victim will forgive the murderer? I mean, there's just such a vast difference in terms of the amount of forgiveness people are willing to give.
Isn't that amazing?
It's crazy, yeah.
You live in the Bay Area. There was a individual from the South Bay who came to one of my classes, or I was talking to about forgiveness, and they were still mad because their neighbor had put their fence 2 inches onto their property, that they had misunderstood where the property lines were, and had stuck their fence 2 inches onto their property and refused to move it. And these people were just besides themselves. And then I've met people again who have had children murdered and can let it go. I've worked with people who, you know, after the attacks on 9/11, or even more recently in the country of Colombia as a response to their civil war. Some of the factors that appear to facilitate or impede forgiveness, the biggest one is narcissism, that a self-centered, lacking empathy point of view is probably the biggest obstacle to forgiveness. And as our culture becomes more and more narcissistic, it appears that it gets harder and harder to forgive, that studies of college students have shown like a dramatic rise in the lack of empathy over the last 20 years. The norming of the test for narcissism, so probably in the last 40 years, has had to be changed, because what used to be seen as narcissistic behavior is now normal. A kind of entitlement, a self-centeredness, and a lack of empathy. So it's an inability to take somebody else's side. It's an inability to feel emotions that other people might have. And it's a kind of like, nobody should do this to me. That those are the cognitive places inside that make forgiveness really difficult.
I completely get the relationship between narcissism and forgiveness. But what about in situations where somebody has wronged the other person repeatedly and they keep forgiving and forgiving and forgiving, and they're giving so much and the other person isn't offering much in return? Do you continue to forgive, or do you just say, hey, that's enough? And if so, how does that make you a narcissistic person when you've tried to give them the benefit of the doubt?
So like, your partner's a drunk, and they come home every weekend drunk, and you continue to forgive them.
Exactly.
Our quick and kind of facile answer to that was, forgiveness and a lobotomy are not the same. That if you forgive somebody for bad behavior, that's very healthy. If you continue to enable bad behavior, that's not healthy at all. And then the problem is not with the forgiveness, but with the enabling. So you can forgive somebody, and yet you can still draw boundaries. You can still have some capacity to say no. That the forgiveness, again, does not mean that your critical faculties shut down. And so somebody who continues to have like an ongoing relationship with somebody who mistreats them, the forgiveness is not the issue. It's the lack of self-respect, the lack of appropriate boundaries, or the lack of compassion for oneself.
So forgiveness doesn't mean you're condoning the behavior.
It's 180 degrees from that. Forgiveness is a very difficult practice, because you start with a full recognition that wrong was done. So it's the opposite of condoning. It's like if you look at the South African Truth and Reconciliation Commission, the beginning of it was truth, which is, this is what happened. These are the horrors that were done. And it's only now that we can think of letting it go. So what makes forgiveness so difficult is that it has no condoning in it. They did wrong, but I'm not going to burden myself and I'm not going to burden my family or my culture with bitterness. And so it's not a whitewashing, but a deeper level and an ego transcendence where I see the harm. I just don't have to stay addicted or attached or obsessed with the harm, that I move on.
What mistakes do people make when they offer forgiveness and then find themselves at odds with the person very soon after?
I don't know that the forgiveness then is the problem. So let's say I hear you saying, so let's say you have a partner and they cheat on you, but your relationship was pretty bad, so the cheating wasn't the whole issue. And they cheat on you, you forgive them, but you're still fighting all the time because you didn't have a good relationship or there were real issues. Forgiveness does not wipe the slate entirely clean of things. It gives us peace inside. So let's just take the heat wave. So it's going to be 100 degrees here, and you can think, well, this stinks, and I'm hot and uncomfortable, and you can let that ruin your day. Or you can think, boy, this stinks, I'm hot and uncomfortable, and then you can tell yourself, well, that's not unusual on planet Earth. People get hot and uncomfortable. I can cope with it. Or you can say, yeah, I'm hot and uncomfortable. And living in Northern California, 98% of the days are delightful. So suck it up. There's all sorts of ways to respond. But let's say if you forgive the heat, it doesn't mean you're not uncomfortable, but you have no bitterness and no tightening around yourself as the victim of the heat. It's just heat, and you have to handle it because it's part of your life. So forgiveness frees you from the stickiness that makes you a victim and frees you from having to create a story around poor you. That's what forgiveness does.
And I know you tell people that instead of mentally replaying your hurt over and over and over again, seek out new ways to get what you want. Tell us more about that and how just reliving the hurt over and over again is not helpful.
One of the things that people do a lot of is they complain about trying to get blood out of the stone. And so they fight the stone, saying, well, you know, stone, you're supposed to give me blood or water because I want it. A lot of times people have a partner that they've been married to for decades who doesn't give them what they want, and they continue to try to get blood from the stone. Many times people have a job that isn't good and they continue to go to work and think, well, it's got to be good. So if you are in a situation or have a past situation which didn't meet your needs, continuing to try to get your needs met by that kind of situation is probably pretty close to an example of stupid. So what forgiveness says is, I forgive whatever it is that wasn't meeting my needs, but it doesn't mean my needs go away. It just means I stop beating my head against the wall and I try to get my needs met someplace else. That's so simple and so filled with common sense that it's still remarkable to me that that's not an obvious duh.
Up until this point, we've been talking about forgiving other people, but I think it's almost harder to forgive ourselves. And I know in my case, I've dealt with a lot of self-blame for things I've done over the years that maybe weren't big deals, but I just beat myself up over them when I'm feeling down. How can we really truly get over the blame we put on ourselves for situations that are in the past and we want to move on from?
I'll answer that, but I'm going to respond first that I think the much bigger problem for the human race is that we're too forgiving of ourselves. I think the human race suffers much more from individuals and not feeling remorse and guilt than from feeling too much. Like most of the bad perpetrated in this world, people justify. And I'm going to say for most of us, the real harm we've done, we justify rather than like cringing at. Once that is aside, and I can tell you that some people do struggle more with forgiving themselves, and those are more women than men, that for whatever, whether it's genetics or socialization or some combination, women tend, and this is not exclusive, but they tend to be harder on themselves. The purpose, and you want to be careful with this because it's good to have a conscience and you want an active part of you that reminds you that, hey, you're not perfect. You screw up. And sometimes a little twinge of remorse or guilt can remind you to have appropriate humility so that it makes you a much better human being. But if you're obsessed with it or it stops you from functioning optimally, then that needs to be unwound. And the most obvious answer is self-acceptance. That, one, all human beings are flawed. All human beings make mistakes. And human mistakes are forgivable. It's a three-step process that all humans make mistakes, all. I've made mistakes as a human being, and it's forgivable. With the self-forgiveness piece, the most important piece of it, though, is to learn, not just to feel better. Doesn't really matter that much whether you stop feeling bad. What matters is, as the 12-step program show, did you make amends? Did you say you're sorry? If you harmed yourself, did you change? Did you grow? Did you adapt different habits? Those are the crucial ingredients for moving ahead. The last piece is sometimes if you particularly harden yourself, you need to learn to pay particular attention to the good that you do. And you need to really focus on it. So yes, I may have let my family down in this way, but in this other 27 ways, I was absolutely wonderful. And that can be a nice antidote to self-attack.
Does time always heal the hurt?
No, but it's a good start that time does tend to lower the hurt. But if you look at our world and all the intergroup, tribal, religious, cultural grievances that exist, many, many, many people practice over time rehearsing, rehashing, and deepening the grievances. So there are families that stay estranged for generations. There are parents who hate each other, the entire life of their children. So it's more what we do inside of us than just time. Time will reduce most wounds and hurts unless we or the people around us need either an enemy or a common foe to make us feel better. That's the hidden piece that is difficult.
Do you think that right now with everything going on with COVID, that this is a good time for us to work on estranged relationships? Because you could make the argument two ways. You could say that now is a good time because we're all sitting down with our thoughts and we have time for phone calls and we can really think about how lucky we are to survive. But I also think you could make the argument that it would be time that we could spend just dwelling on what somebody else has done for us and we're in bad moods because we can't leave the house. What do you think? And what's your initial impression in terms of just whether or not people are using this time to work on relationships?
Well, one of the simple entrees to that is almost everyone has had losses and limitations due to COVID. So the not well off have lost their jobs or have had the hours cut. The well off appear to be keeping their job, but they've had limitations in travel or in like human interaction. So for many of us, we could say that we're an experience of shared suffering. That in and of itself can lead to forgiveness. Positional, like what you read about is that a lot of families now that they're stuck with each other so much, it's made it challenging, you know? So if you have a partner with a bad habit and they were gone 10 hours a day, and now that bad habit is working in the bathroom, you know, while you're working in the kitchen, then that could make getting along with that person even more challenging. So an empathic, compassionate understanding of almost the universality of this suffering is really helpful. The second piece is for many of us, the restrictions on connecting with people we care for or know may have shown us, one, how important they are. But if we're lucky, they will teach us to not take them for granted. And that could be a tremendous blessing from this. And when you don't take people for granted, you become more forgiving. When you recognize the gifts and generosity that they bring, you tend to be more able to overlook the cost. So almost like when you smell the rose and you appreciate the rose's beauty, it's a lot easier to forgive the fact that it has thorns. And that's a metaphor for every person because every person comes with thorns.
How can journal writing help in the process of forgiveness?
Because journal writing is one of the safest, easiest methods of self-exploration and self-expression. And that first part of forgiveness, which is sharing and grieving and releasing and feeling and the whole human experience of suffering. One of the easiest ways is just write about it and to share it, even if it's just shared with yourself. But getting it out is in and of itself therapeutic.
Dr. Luskin, as you know, our show is called Nobody Told Me. So at the end of each program, we ask our guests, what is your Nobody Told Me lesson? So in your case, what did nobody tell you about forgiveness that you wish that you knew before you had your eye-opening experience with forgiveness?
I wish that I had known. It literally had nothing to do with religion or Christianity or anything like that. I wish that I had known it required the full expression of suffering before you could release it. And I wish that I had known that it was a lot simpler than I thought. And I didn't know any of that before I started.
What's the best piece of advice you would give someone who is struggling to forgive a person or a situation?
Depends on their age. If they were older, I would remind them that time is short and that they're mortal. And like, don't waste any more of this precious time arguing with your past. If they were younger, I would remind them that how you deal with difficulty interpersonally will play a big role in whether or not you can maintain and set up a successful intimate partnership. So use it as training. That would be the difference between young and old.
Wow, you've given us such amazing information during this interview, and I just know it's going to help so many people. How can people connect with you and learn about what you're up to? And if they want to learn more about forgiveness, where can they go?
Yeah, I'm not, at this point, I'm not that much of a public person, but they could simply Google my name and they'd see probably 100 YouTube videos and the books that I've written. And, you know, what it, there's so much out in the public domain about the work that I've done that they could learn a huge amount about forgiveness just by putting my name in the little box there.
And you do have a website called learningtoforgive.com, right?
I do.
Yeah, we were looking at that, and that's a real wealth of information. So, well, thank you so very much. We really appreciate you coming on with us and appreciate your advice.
You know, thank you. I made a commitment a long time ago. It's interesting. Not that much after the, you know, being the recipient of Monica and Bill's experience, that for whatever reason, we were chosen to talk about forgiveness. And I was going to respond when people asked me to do that. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you. We very much appreciate your time. Our thanks again to Dr. Fred Luskin. His books are Forgive for Good and Forgive for Love. His website again is learningtoforgive.com. I'm Jan Black.
And I'm Laura Owens.
You're listening to Nobody Told Me. Thank you so much for joining us.